this is Martha Nix Wade with An Exposed Secret. Welcome to SkidRowStudios.com. I'm so thankful you're listening this evening with my guest, Coral Feliciano. We'd love for you to call in at any point, and if you have any questions for us and want to discuss anything we are discussing, at 800-893-9562. Once again, that's 800-893-9562. Coral, welcome. I'm so glad you came.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, Martha.
Coral and I met back at a meeting where many people come together and decide how to really equip local nonprofits and people within the system to help children who are in the system, who are with Child Protective Services. Maybe they're in juvie, in and out. And Coral has an amazing story, and I want to start this evening by having her share about her childhood and just hearing her heart about how she wants to reach out and help kids who are transitioning from children within the system into their adult life and equipping them so it doesn't feel so scary and they don't feel alone. So, Coral, just talk to us about your early years and your family dynamics, please.
Basically, I grew up in an abusive childhood home where both my parents were alcoholics, and my dad was very abusive to both my mom and to me and my sister. And it just kind of went on from there. My parents would drink, and it was just kind of that fast, you know, lifestyle. And my mom, unfortunately, she passed away when I was 13 years old because of alcoholic, you know, tendencies and things like that. And she had problems, and she passed away. And my dad continued to, you know, spiral out of control, and he, through abusive behavior, mental abuse, physical abuse. And my grandma, she called child welfare social services on my father. And basically they took us away, both me and my sister, out of that home. We were actually found in an abandoned house where there was no electricity, no food, nothing. So,
and how old was your sister at this time? You were 13 at this time?
Yeah, I was 13 and my sister was 11, I believe. And even the dog had died. That's how much food was in the house. So, I mean, I always put that comparison in there so people can really see.
And your dad was off?
Yeah, he was passed out, drunk on drugs, things like that. And he was just not there. So.
And how long had you been in your home at this time alone?
At that time, my mom had been passed away about 6 months, I believe. 6 months, half a year.
And were the two of you going to school? Did you have any outlet?
I made sure my sister would, I'd walk her to school. I made sure she'd go to school. But me, I was not attending school. I think my report card said like 78 absences. I mean, it was really bad. I mean, I think I passed eighth grade because they knew my mom had passed away and they felt sorry for me, basically. So
your grandma calls Child Protective Services, and then what happens?
They come, and they sent police officers, and I wasn't at the home my dad was at the time. I was actually at my friend's house, and the police showed up there. And they kind of looked us over, and they're like, they look good to us. Like, why'd they call social services? And I just was staring at them like, I don't know how abused kids, I don't know what you.
What do you look like?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So it was kind of odd that he was saying that to me, like, they don't look abused. Why did you call us? Like, you know, so, and then finally my grandma just was really, you know, adamant, you know, she's like, no, they're not being fed. They're not being looked after. They're running the streets. I started doing drugs myself. I mean, you know, marijuana and things like that. So, you know, she was really adamant about it. And they finally just took us. And I remember they drove us to the social services building, and I remember seeing my dad go into the building like at the same time we were leaving the building. So that was pretty scary. Yeah. So
what did you feel was happening to your dad at that time?
I could tell he was mad and upset, and I think that he was freaking out, to be honest with you. So
did you feel that you were going to get in trouble for
yes,
that?
Yes, I was very deathly afraid. Like if he got a hold of me, I was in big trouble. Yeah.
So did you, at the same time, were you feeling safer being in the hands of Child Protective Services, or what were those feelings like?
Yes and no, because I was afraid that at any moment we'd have to go back and then I'd have to face the music. But at the same time, I did feel like, okay, I'm leaving, you know, so I did feel better, but not really.
So what was that like the day that they took you to Child Protective Services?
It was very scary. I felt alone. I was afraid. I was very much afraid. I mean, I think I'm glad that I had my sister with me, because by myself would have been horrendous. I can't imagine people that are taken out of their homes by themselves. You know what I mean? At least I had my sister with me, but right. it was very, very scary, alone. I was full of shame. All kinds of emotions were going at the same time that I wanted to go, but at the same time, I didn't want to go. So I was very torn. There were feelings of being torn, you know.
Right. And then that day, where did you go?
I'm trying to remember. It's so many years ago. Basically, they took us to our first home, our first foster home. I think it was in, what is it? Not, I don't remember the home where the city was, but it was by Covina. But anyways, they took us to another, a foster home. And that one wasn't too great either. It was just, we were pulled out of that home pretty fast. It was like about a month, I think, we stayed in there. But it was very, like, he used us as like kind of like slave labor, basically. We were like up all day long cleaning her house. She had locks on the refrigerators. She fed us the same thing every day. It was really bad. Like, I don't think kids, you know what I mean? Like, it was just really like cleaning. It was just very
regimented, but yeah. You were used.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And it was like, we ate out of these like plastic Tupperwares every day, the same thing, rice and this meat. And then she had her own kids, but you know, we weren't allowed to have soda, but they were allowed to have soda, but we weren't. So it was kind of weird. And she had a lock on the refrigerator. It was really weird. And I wasn't used to that, you know, so.
Right. You had just come out of complete freedom.
Yeah.
And even though you weren't being fed.
Right.
You had complete freedom.
Right.
Did you feel like any of that freedom was taken away from you when you went from really being neglected into this controlled atmosphere?
Yeah, it was kind of weird because I wasn't used to the regiment, you know, per se, because I had done my own thing. I was doing, you know, I was kind of free doing my own thing, even though I was being abused and stuff, but at least I was doing my own, you know, doing my own thing or whatever. But it was kind of bizarre. And then it was kind of, I don't know, it was just weird. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, who lives like kind of like army? I mean, it was like the army, but I think worse. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what I mean? No, I think the army men and women are fed very well.
They're fed better than I was, I think. So.
So then after you were pulled from that home and it was both you and your sister
yes.
together,
yeah.
Where did you go then?
We actually went to Glendale to a foster home, and she actually had just gotten her license that same day. And we went there, and I literally came with a plastic bag, you know, trash bag full of whatever little things that I did have. And she told me this story later on, but my foster mom, she told me that she just saw these two little girls with these bags staring at us, like afraid, like just at our doorstep, like with these big eyes, like, oh my gosh, who are you? You know?
Right.
So she told me that story later on, but she's like, you were just little girls afraid, like just standing on this porch, you know, like, who are you?
With
you
your
know?
Hefty bags yeah. of belongings.
Exactly. Not right. much in it, but you know.
Right, and that's how the average foster child transferred mm-hmm. from home to home, was with their bodies and their hefty bags
right.
of the few belongings that they had.
Right.
Fortunately, for friends that we have that are working really hard, and they are in Orange County, are working that kids have suitcases, mm-hmm. have new sheets and pillows, and Faith in Motion is the name, and Rylan Burton and Sharon Landis work so hard yeah. with a group of people to really give these kids a new experience unlike your own. So
yeah.
I know the two of us appreciate that, and
yes,
that's why we partner with them. So what happened in that home, and how long? Because you call her your foster mom or
yeah.
mom. So tell us about her and her qualities.
She was an amazing foster parent. I stayed there till I was 18 years old. I went to her house at 13 and I stayed there till I was 18 years old. She was amazing. She showed me a new world. I mean, I think a lot of foster parents need to learn from this lady, because she just really showed us the world, like, you know, arts, and she'd take us to, like, you know, see the orchestra, and she just really, like, put in the time. She always made sure that we had clothes and food. I mean, the lady would cook like three like course meals every day. I mean, she was an amazing cook. And she really, we'd have a salad, soup salad, and a major meal, and then dessert. She was just like that, you know?
Right.
And she always, I was in cheerleading. She always made sure I had all my stuff for cheerleading. And she just made me feel like I could do something, you know, better than where I was coming from. Like, I could do more with my life.
Right.
So, yeah, she was an amazing lady. She just put in the time. She loved us. I mean, she just was always there. She was a really, her name was Andre McAvoy. Sorry, I don't know if I could say names, but I really, and Freddie. And we just had a good family, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And your sister stayed there also until she was 18?
Yes. My sister stayed there till she was like 19. Actually, she stayed there into her 20s. They allowed her to live in the back. They had a back house. And even though that law wasn't in effect yet, but she was able to stay with them in the back till in her like early 20s.
Now, you mentioned the law, and a lot of people listening probably don't know about AB 12. Could you share about what's come to pass in them putting this law into place?
Well, basically, when you were in the when you were in foster care, when you were 18, you pretty much were out of the system, unless you got, you know, what is it? What's that word I'm looking for? Extensions. You could get extensions, but at 19, pretty much you were out the door, and a lot of people are homeless and things like that was happening and things like that. And but now the law's extended the age to 21. And so that might, you know, that's going to help a lot of people to be able to not, you know, go out in the streets and just kind of get college under their belt or whatever they need to do besides just being kicked out at 18 years old.
Right. Which is they need really, a transitional
exactly.
time.
The transition is the problem. And unfortunately, a lot of people become homeless or pregnant, like I did. I became pregnant.
What happened to you when you came out of the home? Because there wasn't any transitional period.
Yeah. Basically, I thought I needed someone to love me. So, of course, I picked up a guy, you know. And I got pregnant at an early age, at 18 and a half, I got pregnant. And I went to live with him. And so that kind of was something that, you know, I didn't know what else to do. I mean, besides, and I got in trouble. I mean, basically, I just wanted somebody to love me. So I went out and found this guy, and I thought he loved me. And I got in trouble and pregnant and all kinds of stuff, you know.
So. I know as we were driving here, you're like, I used to live here.
Yeah. I used to live on Alvarado Street, so not too far down. But yeah, so that was, that's all I knew. I mean, that's all I thought I could do, you know, at the time. So.
And I know after reflection on your life, for many years, you thought it was because of the abusive home that your dad created and the loss of your mom that left you hungry for love and attention and what seemed like affection and affirmation. But I know through our relationship and others, you've realized there was another seed that confused you and gave that. Could you share where that seed was planted at a very young age?
Yeah, it's kind of a touchy subject because I really never shared it until now. So I hope I don't cry.
And if you do, totally fine.
When I was in second grade, my uncle, which he was in sixth grade, he sexually abused me. It was a one-time thing, but I know looking back now, it really just set off this kind of avalanche of me wanting affection and love in the wrong way and accepting it from people that were abusive. And I didn't understand it back then, but now looking back, I do. And it kind of just was this like snowball, I guess, effect of abuse, you know, even though it was one time sexual thing. But now I kind of understand more, you know.
Right. And I think that's many people don't understand that, you know, when you're a parent, you're trying to keep your kids safe from whom you believe are scary adults or questionable adults.
Right.
And one of the largest growing populations is minors abusing children younger than them. And here's an example. He was 12, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
He was 12 and you were 7. And do you have any idea why he knew how to have these sexual acts with another female?
I have no idea, because I really don't. And that, looking back, I do question that, because I'm like, why would he do that to me? Because I don't know what was going on with him, why he had those feelings or tendencies. I don't know what was going on. But and I really don't know, because right. my grandma's not like that. And you know what I mean? So
there wasn't the television exposure or the internet access.
Yeah. And so it's kind of questionable. I don't know. You're right. Like there was an internet, like, as you know, there was no internet at the time. So I don't know.
and that's one element of our work is, like you said, that seed was planted at 7 years old, where you hungered for attention in a sexual manner,
right,
whether it be kissing or more. And then you have to ask yourself, when he was younger, did somebody mm-hmm. do the same thing to him, which caused him at 12 to duplicate that act with you?
Right.
And that's what we see, is that when that is introduced at a young age, you don't know what to do with that. And so you believe that that's love and acceptance.
Exactly.
And in your case, you didn't have a parents showing that love was any different, right, or what you saw as being part of a family was not desirable.
Pretty much. So everything was upside down, right?
Right. So it was easier to believe that, oh, okay, maybe this is love.
Yeah. And I was getting attention, and, you know, I was always wanting to get attention. And so that was another thing, you know, that, you know, I just kind of gravitated to, was, oh, he's giving me attention. It's a man giving me attention, you know. And I think sometimes my dad would work very late, and so my dad wasn't giving me that attention. So when he was giving me that, I guess I kind of was like, oh, you know.
Right. And that's a cry out to parents, as you hear her story, even though you might not be addicted to alcohol and being careless and abusive, if you are not giving love and affection to your child, we will go elsewhere.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, yeah. And perpetrators are, whether they be 12, 14, 44, 84, they're carefully studying family dynamics and finding where they fit in, and where they're not typically jumping in on something carelessly. They carefully and calculatedly look at kids and say, I think this is an opportunity and I won't get caught.
Yeah.
How did he get away with that?
I never said a word about it, pretty much. I never told my parents. That's why this is kind of bizarre to me. I didn't know this was ever going to happen, that I was going to be sharing it on a podcast, but, you know, but, nobody knows. I mean, if they're listening, they know now, but, I never told my sister. I never told my own husband. I never told anybody ever, you know.
And why do you think you didn't share this?
Because I tried to forget it, and I was full of shame, because that's my, you know what I mean? It's just, I was just full of shame, and I just put it in the back of my mind, and I just was like, okay, it's just one time, you know, that's it. Like, I just try to hide it. It was hidden.
And I appreciate what you're saying, in the sense of, you say it was just, because I hear that so much. It was just one time. It was mm-hmm. just a boy. It wasn't a man. It was just my uncle. It wasn't my dad. We're always trying to minimalize what happened to us because of shame, which is not ours to carry. You did nothing wrong.
Right.
You were a trusting 7-year-old little girl looking for love. And at the same time, when we say just and minimalized it, mm-hmm. we're not able to heal through the effects and realize what seed was planted at 7 years old.
Right.
And it's now, as you share, and I appreciate you being willing to, because I know it's very difficult, especially because you haven't shared it with people who are very close to you. So I appreciate you trusting me and our listeners with the truth. And for those family members who are listening, such as your husband, you know you have an amazing woman who has endured much as a child and as a teen, and is really just turning it all around. And as she uncovers different things, as she works with different kids, you know, different things are going to be revealed, such as this.
Right.
And Coral, you're definitely not the first person who has kept this quiet. And that's why our show is called An Exposed Secret. And if anyone wants to, you know, feel a sense of freedom and start washing away that shame and share your story with other listeners, the way in which you can reach us is 800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. This is the place where we want to expose secrets, because pedophiles especially are hoping we'll keep quiet. And a lot of times families want us to keep quiet because they want people to perceive their families as flawless. And it's not a reality. And we shouldn't keep this quiet. We should feel free to tell, because you as a child, I as a child, did nothing wrong.
That's right.
We were wanting to be loved. And when someone shared what probably they believed was love, and which falsely taught us was love, we walked into that door.
Yep.
And everyone who's listening and has experienced this, you're not alone.
That's right.
And we want this to be a place where you can be heard and be you. This is the place to be real and unveil those secrets. We need to expose it. Because one, we need to protect children from this crime.
That's right.
You know, even as foster families pulling kids, you know, they need to take the time to understand them. And as much as your mom loved you and cared for you, your foster mom, there was this whole other side, because you kept it quiet, that she couldn't touch and start to erase those lies that you were taught, because she didn't know.
Right.
You know, and we're trying to equip foster families. In May, there's a conference for foster families, and we'll be teaching them about how to work with kids and unveil, you know, their stories. And we need to open up about this. And Coral, I am so appreciative that you opened up about this with me, with our listeners. And you're going to be able to touch that many more people because of that.
Yes.
Because you have another connection point.
Yeah. I feel free.
It's amazing what, you know, truly speaking the truth is like. Yeah. And so many people feel scared doing so. And that's one reason A Quarter Blue, the organization which I started, aquarterblue.org, exists, is so people can find freedom in being real and truthful. And it is scary to come out and say this happened to you, because many people think, I mean, you said it.
Right.
I believed I had walked away from it. I'd forgotten it.
Yeah.
Did you?
No. I mean, I think I put it away for a while, but like everything, you have to face it, you know? And it came back. I mean, it really did. I mean, I had to face it, you know, and I thought of it, you know, but.
What were some of the things that triggered you in remembering that happening to you at 7?
Just the people that I come across to sharing their stories as well, like of their abuse stories. And I mean, I never had, and also just thinking about the way I deal sexually, I guess. I really buried it for a long time. So it wasn't something that I always thought of. Like, I'm sure that people that go through horrendous, like, ordeals, you know what I mean? But as I just kept growing up and just kind of talking to people and things, it just kept not, it's actually came up a couple times in my own head, even with people that have dealt with sexual abuse, that on a, you know, bigger scale, I guess. I mean, that's how I put it, on a bigger scale. But
more incidents.
Yeah, more incidents, basically. So, and I just would, I'd want to share it, but it was just something you know what I mean? It's just, I didn't do it. I'd want to share it, but I didn't do it, you know? So, I don't know.
But now you've taken the step.
Yeah.
And because you're reaching out to youth.
Yes.
And you've started are in the process of starting an organization. You are an organization,
yes.
And now you're becoming a nonprofit.
Yes.
And so can you share kind of how that vision came about and what your purpose is and your mission?
Exactly.
And we'd just love to hear about it.
It's called Operation SOS. And this year, actually last year, I keep saying this year, But last year we had our first SOS conference, and it is through a dream and a desire that we reach teens and young adults, and so that they would understand their purpose and plan that God has for them. Especially we target foster children and homeless, you know, young adults. But we really just target them because we know that they're the people that just, they don't understand what it is that they have, what God has for them on this planet. They really don't understand their plan and purpose. They're looking at their circumstances, which are tough. I mean, they have hard circumstances, and they really, I just want them to know, I want to reach out to them, and I really want them to know that they can reach above their circumstances, that they have, there's big plans, big purposes, big dreams, big things that they can do with their lives besides being on the streets and being on drugs, getting pregnant at an early age like I did. And I want them to know that there's a family out there, a company, a family of people out there that really want to love on them, that really want to show them more than what they're facing right now. And so SOS was born out of that desire and that and a dream that I had. But and so last year we had our first conference, and it means save our souls, basically. And basically it's just we believe it's the heart's cry of this generation, that they're really, even though they're going through all these things, that they're really seeking something better. They're seeking something, you know, they're seeking love. They're seeking more. There's more. And so we want them to know that there is more for them out there. And we want to help them, and we want to, you know, mentor, and we want to guide them in that area and whatever it is that, you know, God has for them.
Right. And you had things in place where they could, you know, learn how to, you know, work with money, that are really tangible. So what are some things that you weren't equipped with that you're putting in place with SOS? So that they'll know how to transition.
Exactly. We had workshops, and we had one on, what was the one on? It was finance. And because these kids don't know finance. I mean, when I was that age, I didn't know finance. I still have a hard time with finance. I mean, imagine, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, so these kids really need to know what it is to have finances in order and, you know, to get started and to get an apartment and to get, you know, to handle their money in a proper, you know, way that they can live instead of being out on the street. And so that was one. And then another one I think was mentoring, because I think it's important too, because we can give them all this information, but I think they really need people to kind of guide them along, you know, if they want to call up, you know, so-and-so and be like, oh, well, how can I do this? They should be able to have that, because these kids don't have parents. Probably they don't have moms and dads. Like, I didn't have a mom and dad that I could call up and be like, mom, I need help. You know, they don't have that.
Right.
And so that's why we're there to, we want to be able to, you know, guide them and show them guidance and kind of help them along the way so that they can have that maybe that they don't get from their mom and dad, or, you know what I mean? Just that kind of push and that guidance that they need.
Right.
That's so important that people have in a normal family, you know, environment. So, yeah.
No, I know that I've talked to other people who have grown up in the system. And like one woman who lived on the streets, she said, I knew how to beg for money and what place to go to get the next meal.
Exactly.
I just didn't know how to clean a home, do laundry. And,
exactly.
You know, they just feel so ill-equipped to do what we take for granted.
Exactly.
What are other elements that you hope to put in place of, I know you want to love on them,
right.
Let them know that there's great potential for their lives,
right,
out of their hardship. And that's why I like that Christina Aguilera song, you know, that it's out of that hardship that we're going to, you know, rise up and fight. And then the song we close with, you know, that beauty will rise out of the ashes that we were born into very often. But there is great purpose. But what are some other tangible ways that people can come alongside foster kids that are aging out and help and equip them? And give them your contact information if they'd like to get involved with SOS.
It's www.operationsos.info. And you can, that's our website. And you can also email me at coral@operationsosministries.org. And we like to equip them also with gift cards and things like that, because it's important that they're able to get their daily needs, like, you know, socks, underwears, you know, if they're getting, because the thing is, they might be getting into housing, but they don't have certain things, like, you know, like I said, underwear, you know, socks, maybe deodorant, toothbrush, toothpaste, like right. just the basic needs. So we do collect gift cards too. And so that we give them out to, you know, social services, and they hand those things out. So that helps out a lot. I get thank you email, I mean, thank you letters all the time.
And I know that both Roylynn and Sharon have shared that $5 gift cards yeah. make a world of difference to these kids, because that's, you know, deodorant, toothbrush, and toothpaste. And
that's right.
And we need those, you know, like every 3 months.
Right.
And $5 means the world to these kids.
It's so very true. And it makes, and I tell people that donate all the time, you are making such, you don't even know what a big difference you're making in their lives. I mean, the thank you cards that I get are just from even just like single moms. I get from teen moms. I get from teenagers. I get from a lady, she deals with AWOL, which means the kids have actually, the teen has ran away.
That's what from AWOL their foster means,
homes. From their foster homes. And they're AWOL. And she says that when they call her up, she can take them to Starbucks because of the Starbucks cards we gave them. She can take them to the movies because of the movie gift cards we've given them. She can take them to, you know, go eat or whatever and talk to them. And they, and she tells them where these cards come from. And the kids are just, are like, really, somebody out there loves me, like cares about me enough to like donate these cards to me?
Right.
Like it blows their mind. And I actually met this lady a couple months back, and she came running up to me, and she had tears in her eyes. And she was like, Coral, I get to meet you finally because, and she's like, you know, and she's like, you know, I'm the one that sends you the, you know, thank you cards. She's like, you don't know how much this helps. And it just kind of encouraged me and made me feel like, okay, I got to tell everybody these cards are really making a difference. But they are, they really are. Even though it's $5, even though it's $10, whatever it is that, you know, you may, you know, have it on your heart to give, it makes a difference.
It absolutely does. And so if you want to give to Operation SOS, contact Coral at
www.operationsos.info.
And that's how you can connect and help. And I know we're in meetings together where we get to hear these success stories and hear this woman who meets with these teenagers.
Yeah.
And she's a phenomenal person. That's what we're talking about, that mentor. And they call her, what do they call her? Grandma, Mama, the woman you just talked about.
Oh, her name's Maggie, I think.
And I think they call her Mama Mags.
Yeah, or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And she has these amazing relationships with these teenagers. Yeah. And they've got her phone number, and she's ready to pick up for them and be there when they need someone.
Exactly.
And that's what these teenagers and kids need. They need to know they're loved.
That's right.
And I want to go back to what you were talking about when the police officer showed up at your door. Or at your friend's door, you know, and they looked at you and said, well, they don't look abused. If they would have slowed down more,
mm-hmm.
what would they have seen? What did those officers miss?
I think they didn't look in my eyes, because I think when you look into a child's eyes that's kind of destroyed inside, and slow down and do that, I think they would have saw like a child that was scared, alone, and just hurting. But they didn't do that. They just assumed from the outside appearance. And so I think sometimes we need to slow down and we need to take a good look, because people on the outside look like they're not hurting, but on the inside, they really are. They're devastated.
And it's so key that you say that. I've actually, you know, trained some officers and parents and teachers, and that is exactly what I tell them. We need to slow down and get rid of our agenda. You know, for teachers, you know, they've got to teach all that to the test, or, you know, officers, they have to get the report and this, you know, get eye to eye. Take the time to get eye to eye with kids in general and look through their eyes so that you can get to their souls.
That's right.
Look at some pictures of myself as a child, and I was an actress, mm. so I looked perky and happy and all that. But if somebody would have slowed down,
mm.
they would have seen my eyes with a forlorn look, crying out for help.
Mm.
But most people don't.
No.
We're moving. And we need to slow down.
Yeah, we do.
As a culture, we need to set aside our I whatevers.
Yeah.
And take time to spend time, not only with kids, but with people.
Right.
Because if you consider that at least 25% of our population has been sexually abused before the age of 18, we're not even talking about people who were raped post 18 or who were beat, feel alone. We would have such a greater impact and be a more amazing community, because you're not going to see that in a text.
No.
You know, you're not going to see that on someone's Facebook post. You're going to see it over a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Like that. What is it? Skin to skin contact. I mean, you know what I mean? That the internet sometimes is like, we just put on this persona of who we want to be sometimes. And really, people are really hurty behind that. We on Facebook or whatever it is. But we put out this like, you know, everything's okay. Everything's okay. But it really isn't. And so I think when we really meet face to face to people, it's important, because we can kind of get, you know, we can finally see, you know, what is really going on. Not that Facebook image or that, you know, Instagram image that people want, you know, that what we want them to see, you know what I mean? So.
Right.
Yeah.
And so how have you seen the people that you're working with make a difference in these kids' lives? What are they doing? I mean, you've talked about who we believe her name is Mama Mags.
Yeah.
taking the time over coffee or movies. What are other tangible ways that people can interact with teenagers to encourage them and let them know that they are loved and that there are amazing plans for them, and they just need to grab onto them and have mentors alongside of them?
The point is to strengthen these kids. You know what I mean? That's the whole point of it. But I think people need to, if they can't give the money, they can give their time. They can volunteer at conference, at SOS conference, or go to their, you know, nearest, you know, group home or something, and see what they can do. Sometimes we can volunteer our time, because I know at one point I didn't always have, you know, the funds to give all. I mean, I wish I can give all kinds of things to people, but giving my time, you know, to these organizations, you know, and just really giving of time, and just so your skin, you know what I mean? Your face, you can be in face to face, and you can kind of pour into these kids' lives if that's something that, you know, they would want to do, you know?
Right. So you can look up online and find where your local group homes are.
Exactly.
Call Child Protective Services in your area and say, I'm willing to help. Let me know what I can do.
Exactly.
You know, and that's every place in America has Child Protective Services, and even in other countries, there are ways to come alongside of orphanages and the like, and let these kids know that someone out there is going to cheer for them.
Exactly.
You know, and I know last year in February, my daughter and I went to India, and we were at an orphanage, and what an amazing trip that was to go with my then 13-year-old daughter. And at the site, they actually use music, dance, and art therapy with all of these kids.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sunshine Kids International was started by Mary Gothi when she went to her husband's family. And she saw just the plight of the children on the streets, and it broke her heart. And she says, I have to do something. And so she found this orphanage, St. Catherine's, and has worked alongside of them. And they have an amazing choreographer, Terrence Lewis, who his dance company comes in and teaches these kids dance. And it's one of the most amazing dance companies in India. And here are these professional dancers coming in and working with these kids with their talent. They're not giving money.
Exactly.
They're sharing their dance talent with these kids. And then they have this celebratory dance concert, dance show in February called Happy Feet. And I was there for the show, and it's amazing. Aww. It is amazing. These kids are amazing dancers, and it allows them to express their lives through movement. And because sometimes when you've grown up in a physically abusive home, the only way you know how to act is through physical unhealthy reaction with kids. But they're doing capoeira, which is a martial arts form, to work out. And it's, you know, a no-touch thing, but it's beautifully acrobatic. And they have an outlet, or through art, therapy. And as an organization, A Quarter Blue, we also use art. The first Saturday of every month, we bring together child victims with their parents and then adult victims, and we do art with them and express what's inside upon canvas or on wood and bring healing qualities out of what was once very painful, but we turn it into art.
Wow.
And amazing. And that's what's going on there. And that's, we need to pour into people, and it doesn't necessarily have to be financially.
No.
If you are an artist, you can come alongside of an organization such as A Quarter Blue and donate your artistic talent. We have art exhibits where you can share your art to communicate, to bring about a heightened sensitivity to what's going on in our world and the people that are hurting, but at the same time, that there's hope.
That's right.
I mean, if you could see Coral, I don't look at Coral and I'm not like that police officer who missed it. I don't look at you and think, oh, poor Coral. You know,
no.
She grew up without a mom and with an abusive dad. Yes, that's part of who you are. It's your story.
That's right.
But it doesn't diminish the hope you have and your passion and compassion to help kids. And I don't look at a sad woman. There are no longer vacant, hurting eyes.
No.
I'm not missing it. Promise
She's
you.
She's looking at me eye to eye. Right
eye
now.
To eye. There's love. There's hope. And there's a healed woman before me. And I love having her in my life. We've just known each other a short amount of time, but there's so much to do together.
Yes, there is. There's a lot of work to be done, right?
Absolutely. And there's work for you, too. In your areas, you just need to have the heart to help and use your story. I know that Coral is going to be even that much more effective after today, that she shared her story, what seemed like one of shame and embarrassment. It's not.
It's not.
You know, there's a book that I read when I was a kid that's a classic, you know, The Scarlet Letter. And people want us to wear a scarlet letter quite often if we were sexually abused. That it's there, but at the same time, you know, we're not supposed to talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's a lie.
It is.
It's not our shame to bear.
No.
I wear it courageously so that people know that they're not alone. And now we're wearing the same badge.
That's right.
You know, and, you know, each of us looks unique. And some people want to say, and I've had it said to me many a time, oh, and they say it in hushed tones. They say, oh, you help those people.
Like, wow.
What's those people? One day we were having it was actually a garage sale to help raise funds for A Quarter Blue. And I heard this woman in Spanish say, and she said, she helps the poor people. As if only the poor have been sexually abused, you know, or those people have been sexually abused. I'm like, what? I'm those people. What does those people look like? You know, I'm blonde, maybe with a little help these days. But, you know, I grew up in a middle upper class, you know, home. I was a child actor. What does those people look like? They look like me. They look like you. You can't see Coral, but I mean, Coral's brunette. We look... Yeah. I mean, our eyes are similar.
We have colored eyes.
We have colored eyes, exactly. And we're going to post a picture of the two of us, you know, on our Facebook site, An Exposed Secret. And you'll see that what's our similarity on the outside? Hopefully you'll see in our eyes that both of us have hope.
Yes.
And we have passion that we want to make a difference and encourage people who have had a tough...
Go.
Yeah. We're here. We're here for them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people want to put it in a box of what a sexually abused person looks like. And you can't.
Looks like me and you.
Exactly. And so many more.
It's
male. It's female.
That's right.
It's white. It's black. It's everything.
Mm.
No culture has been untouched by sexual abuse.
Wow.
And that's another secret that we're exposing. Every single culture has been affected by sexual abuse. At the same time, there's hope and healing. You are not alone. while we are a show that wants to prevent childhood sexual abuse, we want to let people who have survived sexual abuse know they're not alone. We need to be a place where you can be heard, where you can belong, and you can be you. For you looks different for all of us, but we have a common thread. We have a common thread that we endured something very difficult as a child that most of us probably didn't tell. You know, I love when they start talking about statistics about sexual abuse because, I mean, one of them is 75% of sexual abuse goes unreported. How do they know? It's not reported. Mm. Coral, how old are you?
I'm 31 years old.
31. And today is the first day she shared what happened to her as a seven-year-old. So if they had walked up to her on the street and gave a census of, you know, like when I asked her, I said, well, you were you sexually abused as a child? And that's complicated.
I think something
of your response. That's how many people feel. But there are others, like a friend of mine, she didn't remember till she was 55 years old.
Oh, wow.
There are many people who don't remember or who have never told. So the statistics, in essence, are laughable because most of us keep this deep inside.
Yeah.
Afraid that we'll be shamed or our families will be shamed. What will people think about us? I remember when I first came out about being sexually abused, my boss, he said, don't tell anyone. You're more than that. You don't want people to treat you like you're abused. What?
Okay.
Okay. Well, then that problem is upon them, not on me.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to treat me differently because I was sexually abused, why should I carry that burden?
Mm-hmm.
That's upon them.
It's their problem.
Exactly. But we're so afraid what people are going to think, how they're going to treat us differently if we let this portion of us out in the open.
That's true.
And we've got to stop that because all we're doing is giving perpetrators more room to get away with what they're doing.
That's true.
And we need to expose them for who they are and what they're doing. And unfortunately, children are acting out sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get them help and stop saying, oh, it's just curiosity. It's just childhood play. I'm sorry, but they could be prosecuted for acting out upon a child and be in juvenile hall. And the effects upon a child are no different. You've shared that today, Coral. You were affected by him even though he was 12.
Yes, I was.
It had nothing to do with his age. It had everything to do with what he made you do to him.
Mm. Yeah, that is very true.
And everybody needs to realize that.
They do.
The word just, he was just 12. He was just, she was just.
Just one time.
Exactly. We need to stop minimalizing what happened to us and see how it affected us. And get the help we need.
That's right.
And there are many places that want to help you. And I know we as an organization want to help you. We're A Quarter Blue, found at www.aquarterblue.org. We have support groups. And really, we do things somewhat backwards. We don't say, we have a support group for men on this day. We have a support group for women on this day. When you turn to us and say, I need a support group, and I'm a woman, I'm a man, I have a teenager who wants a group, we create those groups within your schedule. And we want to be there for you, but we know it's tough enough to admit that this happened to you.
Right.
And it's tougher to show up at a group, you know. We understand the challenges, so we want to make it as easy as possible. So we're here for you. Reach out to us, info@aquarterblue.org. let us know what you need, and we'll do our best to come alongside of you and help you. We're longing to help you and let you know you are not alone. And I know Coral is there for youth within the system, and if you're a foster parent,
that's right.
She's there for you.
Yes.
She wants to help. And you have a community that wants to support you, and we will be there to the best of our ability to equip you to be empowered.
That's right.
And first start with yourself and your healing and your growing, because we're really hypocritical if we're reaching out and helping others when we haven't looked inward.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there was a long time where I was helping, or at least I thought I was helping a lot of people, you know, and I look back and I said, man, I wish I would have dealt with myself first.
Yeah. You have to be honest with yourself.
Right. And as you're honest with yourself, though, you become that much better.
That's right.
At helping others.
That's right.
And I want to really encourage you to become a subscriber of this show. We're on iTunes now, and you can subscribe weekly, and we're going to hit all sorts of topics. We're going to have other guests such as Coral, who have turned somewhat of a very difficult childhood into something amazing, to show that there's hope, there's healing.
Yes.
And really, we become much more effective in our lives because of what we've endured. And we want you to be able to subscribe to that. We want you to become more effective parents so your kids are protected. If you're a parent whose child has endured sexual abuse, we want you to be part of our community so you know you're not alone. And so we're hopefully giving you new insights to love your kids, to be there for them, so that they know that there's hope in their healing and that their voice is heard, it's important, and we're here to make a difference. And subscribe, and you can help us have a greater impact. Coral and I were talking about, I mean, both of us want to do amazing things and not just outside of our doorstep, but beyond. And a podcast enables us to transform the world, because people can tune in and subscribe on iTunes to An Exposed Secret in California, in New York,
everywhere,
and beyond. And we're all about beyond, because like I said earlier, sexual abuse affects every culture, and every culture needs to reach out and protect their kids and empower them to know that their opinions matter.
Yes.
And I know as children, we were just being obedient and being part of a family.
Yeah.
And we just set aside what maybe didn't feel so right because we didn't feel like it mattered. Your kids need to know that what they think matters.
That's right.
And you will be there for them. You will be their voice for them. That if someone feels uncomfortable and they tell you, you'll listen. And you won't force them to go somewhere because they're family. That's a mere title. It doesn't enable them to do whatever they please. If they say, I don't want to go over there, you can ask why. I don't know. And if they don't have the words to tell you, it might just be they don't have the words to tell you. But don't force them to go because they cannot communicate what makes them uncomfortable. Protect them. Be their voice. If they say, I don't want to kiss the scary Aunt Mary, don't make them, because she's family. Something doesn't feel right to them. And kids have an amazing intuition, and we need to trust that. And you know what? As adults, we have pretty amazing intuitions also. Mm. And this week, as you walk through your week, realize if you have a sixth sense about something, trust that sense in your gut. Don't go to the place that feels unsafe. Don't create a relationship with someone who feels unsafe. Your gut speaking the truth. Mm. Follow your gut. Thank you for being a part of An Exposed Secret. We appreciate your time and your commitment to heal and empower the people in your lives. Have a great week.